Daniel chapter 5, we're going to read from verse 1 to verse 7. Verse 1 to verse 7 to start off. As many of you may know, if you're here for the first time, we've actually been in a study through the book of Daniel called In the Fire. And we're talking about what it looks like to be people who are a part of a world but not of the world, who live in a world as if we were exiles, because the Bible makes it very clear that we do not belong to this world. This is not our home. And so we have to be very cognizant of that every aspect of our lives, because you will never be able to thrive spiritually if you do not understand that the world that you are a part of and living in currently is not the world that you live for. And so we're talking about what it looks like to live in this world and thrive in this world without having to cave to its demands, without having to bend our knees to its thoughts and teachings and ideologies, but being faithful to who the Lord has called us to be. And so we get to Daniel chapter 5. This is after Nebuchadnezzar is restored, after God had to deal with him and humble him. And come on, did Abby not preach an incredible word last week? Listen to me. If you didn't get to hear it, go to YouTube. Listen to that message. She honestly absolutely killed it and slayed it. But today, I want to focus on the fact that now Nebuchadnezzar is out of the picture and this new king is ruling. Now, let me give you some context for what's happening, okay? Historically speaking, by the time we get to chapter 5, Nebuchadnezzar's out of the picture. And now, remember, if you remember in chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar had this dream about how his kingdom would be torn down and another kingdom would rise up. Now that's coming to fruition, and the Medes and the Persians are actually outside of the walls of Babylon getting ready to siege it. The city of Babylon is under siege and under attack. And I want you to see within the first 7 verses what the king of Babylon is doing as his city is in the midst of danger, okay? And here's what it says. It says, King Belshazzar made a great feast for 1,000 of his lords and drank wine in front of the 1,000. And verse 2 says, Belshazzar, when he had tasted the wine, commanded that the vessels of gold and of silver that Nebuchadnezzar, his father, now the word father, he wasn't actually his son, he was a descendant of Nebuchadnezzar. So Nebuchadnezzar's the patriarch, he's more like his grandson or great-grandson, okay? But he's saying Nebuchadnezzar, his father, had taken out of the temple in Jerusalem, be brought, that the king and his lords, his wives and his concubines might drink from them. Verse 3 says, then they brought in the golden vessels that had been taken out of the temple, the house of God in Jerusalem, and the king and his lords, his wives and his concubines drank from them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and silver, bronze and iron, wood and stone. Verse 5 says, immediately the fingers of a human hand appeared and wrote on the plaster of the wall of the king's palace opposite the lampstand, and the king saw the hand as it wrote. And verse 6 says, then the king's color changed and his thoughts alarmed him. His limbs gave way and his knees knocked together. Verse 7, the king called loudly to bring in the enchanters, the Chaldeans, and the astrologers. The king declared to the wise men of Babylon, whoever reads this writing and shows me its interpretation shall be clothed with purple and have a chain of gold around his neck and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom. So let me just give you a little bit of context about me. One of the things that you might find interesting about me, and you might not, it might be boring, you might not even care anything about me, which is fine. But just to give you a little detail into my life, I don't like horror movies. I hate horror movies. I hate horror movies because I'm a chicken. A little bit of a coward. For me, horror movies are the most excruciating thing to watch because first and foremost, I think there's already enough fear and anxiety in the world that we don't need to bring some more fear and anxiety into our lives. Another reason why I don't like watching horror movies is because I think the people within the movie are stupid. And let me explain, okay? You ever watch a horror movie and get frustrated because all the signs are there, right? The signs are there. Like, you've got this little blonde-haired chick with blue eyes in the house by herself, right? And she hears something ruffling in the basement. And she's all by herself in the house. And as you're watching her getting ready to open the basement door, you're like, uh-uh, don't do it. You don't want to go down there. He's waiting for you with a machete, right? You're walking down a dark path, and the street light is flickering, right? And here's this blonde hair, blue-eyed dude. I don't know why. It's typically blonde hair, blue-eyed. Don't just talk to the people who write it, okay? Here's this blonde hair, blue-eyed dude. He hears some ruffling in the woods, and all of a sudden, you see him, and you're like, what are you doing? Keep running. You don't need to inspect what's in the wood. Everybody knows. I don't know about you. Now, I'm Puerto Rican, okay? If I'm hearing something in the woods and it's midnight and the lights are flickering, I'm not running towards it. I'm not doing it. I'm running in the opposite direction. Why? Because the signs are there that I just might die. And so as I'm watching these movies, I'm going, what are you doing? You idiot, don't go there. Don't do that. Don't open that door. Don't jump into the woods. And we laugh about that. But here's the reality, that many of us treat our everyday life that way. See that? You see how I... You're like, right? Many of us go through life ignoring the signs. Many of us know the danger's right in front of us, and we walk right into it. And we know there just might be a possibility that the enemy is sitting there, ready to devour me, ready to slay me, ready to take my life, ready to steal and to rob and to kill. Like, the Bible is so clear about it, and yet we ignore the signs. We ignore the caution signs. You ever been driving and you're driving to work and you're extremely late and there's a sign there that says road closed, and you're like, maybe I could get through. And then you go through and you realize, nope, now I got to figure out how I can get outside of this 13 car line, do some really sketchy K-turn, which might lead me to hit somebody's car, and go back in the opposite direction. Why? Because we ignored the sign that was very clear, don't go that way or it might cost you. And while many of us laugh about it when it's somebody else, it ain't so funny when it's your life. This is the scenario that this king finds himself in. King Belshazzar is right now facing his entire nation is under attack. And rather than choosing to look at the signs and see that his life is in danger, the man throws a party. Talk about the Lulu. Like, homeboy, everything is crashing. The city walls are under attack. You're about to lose your life, and everyone around you is about to lose their life. You're about to become slaves. And here this boy is throwing a party for 1,000 of his lords. And then, as if to make matters worse, not only is he throwing a party at a time that you should not be throwing a party, he decides, I don't want to just get any vessels to pour wine in and drink out of. Why don't we get the gold vessels that were set apart for God, that were meant for his glory, that were holy and sacred to the people of Israel? Why don't we take those things, pour wine in them, and get drunk off of them? Because here's what happens. I don't know if you realize this or not, but pride will actually cause you to treat things that are sacred as if they're not significant. Pride will cause you to treat things that are meant to be holy as if they're not holy. Pride will get you to think that everything that is sacred Is it significant? So then I will treat it as common. You want me to give you some proof? Because for the people, for Belshazzar, it was gold vessels that were intended to be utilized in the temple as an act of worship and glorifying the Lord. For us today, it's the way that we treat sex, which is supposed to be holy and set apart and sacred within the context of a marriage that is intended to be to increase the intimacy and the bond between a husband and a wife, and we treat it as if it's a common sexual experience that is just intended to meet my pleasures and my needs. Can I go a little further? We treat marriage, which is supposed to be sacred and holy, as if it's something insignificant like a certificate or a piece of paper. Therefore, it's easy for me to just walk away from it and not really cling to the covenant that I have made before God and man. Let's take it a little further. The way that we treat church as if it's something that's intended to meet my desires and my pleasures and my first preferences, not God's ultimate plan for bringing and building a body of people who are living on mission, who are making a difference in the world. Whether you want to acknowledge it or not, your sin and your pride has led you to treating things that God has set apart, made sacred and holy, as if they are insignificant. But God, and you're ignoring all the signs. You know what? Because I know people might get a little frustrated, we are ignoring the signs. What areas, what things in your life, what things in your life have you diminished so greatly? Because here, Abby said this so clearly. When you're reading the Bible, we all have a tendency to see ourselves as the hero. So you're waiting for me to get to the part where I tell you you're Daniel. But you're Belshazzar. We become so delusional and blinded by our own pleasures that we have negated the reality of the danger that we're facing. So we're living it up. YOLO, that was like back in millennial days, right? Young kids are like, what's that? You only live once, so go ahead and live it up. Do your thing. Do what pleases you. For today's generation, live your truth. Your truth is killing you. Your truth is leading you down a dark path. Your truth is leading you to a danger. And so rather than living your truth, I wonder what your life would look like if you would actually begin to live his truth. But here's Belshazzar throwing a party, relinquishing all reality of the danger of the situation that he's in. He treats sacred things as if they're insignificant, and he's giving his life to idols. For us, we do this every day. We give ourselves to the Summer Slams. We give ourselves to the celebrities. We give ourselves to the status. We give ourselves to riches. We give ourselves to alcohol. We give ourselves to drugs. We look for satisfaction in relationships. We think that the bigger the bag, the better off I am, because the more secure I will be. And really what it is you've made an idol out of something and you're ignoring the signs, because let me tell you, the writing is on the wall. The writing's on the wall. Now, it may not be on a physical wall, but the reality is that the writing is on the spiritual wall of your heart. The writing has been written already here in the Word. And I know that I'm probably stepping on toes, and people don't like the doom and gloom message. And that's not what this is. A call to hope. This is a call to light. I want to help you see that there's another way that doesn't have to lead to your demise. But you have to understand that the writing is on the wall. And whether you like it or not, uninvited or invited, God at some point will show up. And when he shows up, you will be shaking in your boots. Because anytime you come into an encounter with the glory, the power, and the majesty of God, you have to come to the reality of your own soul. And that's what happens to King Belshazzar. He's partying it up. He's living it up. He's making a mockery. Listen to me. It's not that Belshazzar did not know. He knew what he was doing. So really, this wasn't an act of ignorance. It was an act of disobedience. And it was an act of just straight rebellion towards God. But hey, while everything else is burning, as long as I feel good, your whole world is falling apart and you try to find your security in things that are very unstable. You think you're safe, and the reality is that you're not. And at one point or another, God has to step in to let you know the reality of your condition. This is where we're at in chapter 5. Now remember that the audience that which Daniel was writing this book to were people who were exiles themselves. And the reason why he wrote the book of Daniel was to encourage them as exiles, that even though they were living as exiles, they didn't have to live as exiles, if you get what I'm saying. Just because they were slaves didn't mean they have to become slaves. They didn't have to have a slave mindset. And so the reason why Daniel includes this chapter is two reasons. Number one, to warn the Belshazzars that, listen, your time is coming and you're headed down a wrong path. And this is what happens when you head down a wrong path. But it was also an encouragement to those who were in exile to let them know that at some point the misery would end. At some point the destruction, that which is keeping you bound, that which is keeping you enslaved, that which is keeping you from the purpose, the promises of God in your life, the things that are keeping you bound in sin will be destroyed by the power, the promise, and the purpose of God. And so we get to verse 7, and Belshazzar is freaking out. Because when you come to the reality of who God is, you also come to the reality of who you are. And now you're found in a position where you're wondering, what do I do? You're in this scene where it's like the Lord of the Rings, and you see this giant hand just floating in the air, and it's writing on the wall, and Belshazzar begins to freak out, and he's like, somebody, we got to figure out what this means. And so he says, get all the enchanters, get all the Chaldeans, get all the astrologers, get everybody in this piece, and whoever can show me the interpretation of what's going on shall be clothed with purple, this is verse 7, and have a chain of gold around his neck, and shall be the third ruler. Now, as we continue through the story, I'm not going to read it because we don't have the time. It's already 11. But if you continue to read the story, you realize that the problem is nobody around can interpret what's going on. So now here's the problem, that if we don't know what it means, we don't know where our life is going until there is one person who remembers somebody that had been forgotten. And his name is Daniel, which is the author of the book, which is who the book is written from his perspective. And this Daniel now, at this point, is between the ages of like 70 and 80 years old. So now, he was 14 when he got into this place. He's now 70 or 80 years old, and he's gained some wisdom. He's gotten revelation. He has resolved in his heart that no matter what, I will not compromise who I am and what God has called me to do. And so from the last time he had to deal with Nebuchadnezzar, nobody has heard from Daniel. Nobody has heard about him. Nobody's called him into the picture. Nobody's relied on him for anything. He's just kind of in the background until this happens. Why is that? Because listen to me, while the world may forget about you, God knows exactly when to call your name. And he is never too late. And he is never unaware. So he calls Daniel. Now remember, the king said, whoever can tell me what this dream means, and it can tell me what this hand has written, can interpret the sayings, because it was a language they could not understand. So he's like, if somebody can tell me what these words are saying and what they mean, then I will clothe them with purple. I will give them riches. Purple is the color of royalty. So what he's saying is, I will give them the status of royalty. I will give them authority. I will give them riches. There's a reward attached to it. And so by the time we get to verse 13, it says, then Daniel was brought in before the king. The king answered and said to Daniel, you are that Daniel, one of the exiles of Judah, whom the king, my father, brought from Judah. He said, I have heard of you that the spirit of the gods in you, that the light and understanding and excellent wisdom are found in you. Now the wise men and the enchanters have been brought in before me to read this writing, make known to me its interpretation, but they could not show the interpretation of the matter. But I have heard that you can give interpretations and solve problems. Now, if you can read the writing and make known to me its interpretation, he goes on to tell him, I will clothe you in purple and have a chain of gold around your neck, and you shall be third ruler in the kingdom. Here's the problem with that. The kingdom is under attack. What do you have to offer me? What am I going to be, third ruler of the slaves? Right? So Daniel responds in verse 17. Then Daniel answered and said before the king, let your gifts be for yourself and give your rewards to another. Here's why Daniel says that. And here's what we can learn from this, is that at some point or another, we are going to have to understand that there is nothing this world can offer us that would be worth compromising for. What Daniel's trying to say is, I don't need your riches, because your riches have no meaning. There's nothing of substance that you could give me. What you don't realize is that everything you could give me that pertains to this world is fading away. But the kingdom that I represent is a kingdom that is eternal. You see, that's the reason why I don't live for what this world has to offer me. I live for what the kingdom of God has to offer me. Because the kingdom of God's offerings not only satisfy, but they remain forever. And so Daniel's not just refusing a gift. He's taking a stand and saying, nothing you offer me is worth taking. Nothing you offer me is worth compromising. Now just think about how easy it is for us sometimes. And we fall for so many things that the world has to offer us, as if they have any meaning. But I listen to me, just like for Belshazzar, whose kingdom was currently under siege, whose kingdom was being destroyed, everything this world will have to offer you will also be destroyed. Yeah. It will also fade away. Yeah. That's why the Bible tells us to not to store your riches here on earth, where the moth could eat it up and the rust could deteriorate it, but to store your riches in heaven, where it would last for eternity. What are you living for? What have you lowered your standards for? Daniel says, no. You could keep your riches and you can have your reward, O king. And the Most High God gave Nebuchadnezzar, this is verse 18, your father, kingship and greatness and glory and majesty. And because of the greatness that he gave him, all peoples, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him. Whom he would, he killed. And whom he would, he kept alive. Whom he would, he raised up. And whom he would, he humbled. But when his heart was lifted up and his spirit was hardened, so that he dealt proudly, he was brought down from his kingly throne, and his glory was taken from him. In other words, God is the one who established your grandfather or father Nebuchadnezzar, and he is the one who took his reign away. Yeah. Right? So as he continues, Daniel's going, do you remember everything that God did in the life of Nebuchadnezzar? How he made him a beast, how he used him as an example to humble him, and how he used him as an example to restore him. And he gave him all the authority, and he gave him his kingdom, and he let him rule and reign. The only reason why you are in the position that you're in is because of God's mere grace and mercy. That's what he's saying from verses 16 to 23 until we get to 24 when it says, then from his presence, I'm sorry, let's get verse 23, verse 22. It says, and you, his son Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart, though you knew all these things. What's he saying? You ignored the big flashing signs. You knew what would happen if you gave your life to arrogance. You knew what would happen if you gave yourself to pride. You knew what would happen if you give yourself to pleasures. You knew what would happen if you treated holy things as if they were unholy. You knew what would happen if you tried to twist the truth. You knew what would happen if you did not hear the words of God. You knew what would happen if you went down the dark and lonely path, and yet you decided with knowing what would happen where you would still go. And you refused to humble yourself. And I say that because if we remember as we started this book, a lot of what we go through in life is not happenstance. It's not God taking an L. It's not God missing the mark. It's not God being totally aloof to what's happening. A lot of what we face in life are the consequences of the bad decisions that we make. So what happens a lot of times, I'm not saying all the time, but a lot of times and most times, the experiences that we experience in our lives are not only the consequences of the bad decisions that we make, but the consequences of the bad decisions that others make around us. So this is God saying to Belshazzar, you knew what would happen if you took this path. Let's be honest. I know there's kids in the room, but we all know what happens when we involve ourselves in sexual intercourse. So when those things happen, they're not an inconvenient storm that just happens in your life. They're the consequences of your decisions. You know what happens if you don't steward your finances well. So when you're staring at all this debt, it's not the devil. It's not a spirit of poverty. It's you making the bad decisions financially that led you to bad consequences financially. So a lot of times in life, it's not hoping that we don't experience difficult times. Those things will come. It's understanding that difficult times will come, but we can avoid some of those things if we just make the right decisions, if we just take the right steps, if we just don't go through doors we're not supposed to go through, and we don't walk through dark paths we ain't supposed to walk on. How much in your life could you avoid if you just didn't walk in the darkness? And if you use this for more than just a placeholder on your coffee table, and you open this up more than just on Sundays when Pastor says, let's get to Daniel chapter 5. But you make it a daily habit of seeing what it is the Lord has already commanded us to do, and then you say, I'm going to actually live this way. Because if I don't, it leads me to destruction. So Daniel saying to Belshazzar, you knew what would happen if you go down this route. You have Nebuchadnezzar's example. And for us today, we have the example of the scriptures. We have no excuses. We have the example of what it looks like when Lewis comes up here and stands. We have an example of what it looks like for somebody who's going through a drug addiction, submits his life to Christ, walks in his ways, and now he's living out on mission. We have that example.
But the other example outside of that is if he doesn't submit, if he doesn't obey, if he doesn't surrender, then he continues the walking the mission of his drug addiction. We have those examples. They're all over. We see them in marriages and relationships where, like people will say all the time, man, and I'm not saying this pridefully, people will look at us and go, man, I wonder what it would like to have a healthy marriage. You have no idea the work it takes for us to be in this healthy marriage. So imitate us as we imitate Christ. When you see the example, when you see the warnings, when you see the signs, don't ignore them, but follow them. Because if you ignore them willfully, you have led yourself into danger. People say all the time, well, God, how could God allow so many bad things to happen? Every single day. Every single day. People see the examples. They see the signs. They see the warnings. And they ignore them. And then we point the finger at God and say it's his fault. God has set his standard literally in stone. He says, live this way, go this way, do this thing. Don't retaliate. Humble yourself. See, think of yourself soberly, right? Think of others as better than yourselves. Don't give yourself to anger. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Wives, submit to your husbands and honor them. Love your neighbor as you would love yourself. Every single example is written in here, and every single day people ignore it. That's like going to the state after somebody has gotten into a car wreck because they ran a red light. And instead of blaming the person who ran the red light, you blame the person who made the laws. We do it every day. And God said, but I told you it's not good to run a red light. Because this is what happens when you run a red light. So Daniel says to Belshazzar, you saw the example of your father Nebuchadnezzar. And you, his son, Belshazzar, verse 22, have not humbled your heart, though you knew all this. But you have lifted up yourself against the Lord. And here's what happens. He tells him, you took these things, these vessels that were supposed to be sacred, they're supposed to be holy, and you used them to drink wine out of, you, your concubines, and all your peeps. And then he looks at him and it says, verse 24, then from his presence the hand was sent, and this writing was inscribed, and this is the writing that was inscribed, Mene, Mene, Tekel, and Parsin. Verse 26, this is the interpretation of the matter. Mene, Mene, Mene means God has numbered the days of your kingdom. He has brought it to an end. Tekel, you have been weighed in the balances and found wanting. Perez, your kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and the Persians, which are at your door. Verse 29, then Belshazzar gave the command, and Daniel was clothed with purple, and a chain of gold was put around his neck, and the proclamation was made about him that he should be the ruler in the kingdom. And that very night, Belshazzar, the Chaldean king, was killed. Pause. Daniel just interpreted the dream. Here's the interpretation. Mene, which means your days are numbered. Tekel, which means you have been weighed on the balance and found wanting. Parson, which means that your kingdom is divided and given to the Medes. We look at that and we say, Belshazzar is screwed. Here's the reality. That while those are ancient words, the reality remains true for all of us today. This is not about King Belshazzar. This is about us. Mene, mene. Which means your days are doubly. You need to understand there's urgency. Your days are numbered. Here's the reality. We all have this in common. That at one point or another, we leave this earth. Whether it be through sickness, a car accident, natural life ending, whatever the case may be. Your days are numbered. And it's interesting that God would write it twice, because he wants you to understand how urgent this message is. This is why the psalmist would write, teach us to number our days. Why? So that we would live with wisdom. Yes. Because when you understand that you only have a short amount of time, you will live with purpose. You will live without giving yourself to everything that throws itself at your way. And you will understand, I've only got one life to live. I've only got a few years, though they be 70, 80, 90, whatever they are few in comparison to the vastness of eternity. Your days are numbered. What are you going to do with them? And now that you've wrestled with the reality that you only have a life that literally the Bible says is like waves in the ocean. They come and they go. It's like vapor who is here for a second and totally disappears. It's like flowers who are here in the spring and they're gone by the winter. That's your life. It's very short. It only lasts for a moment. Now that you understand that, also understand that I have weighed you in the balance and found you wanting, meaning that you are missing the mark. You don't meet the expectation. Here's the reality. None of us do. Not even the guy that's speaking to you right now. When I stand on the balances of eternity, the reality is that even your pastor comes out short, vastly, immensely. Because if you got a glimpse into my soul, you would find out how desperately I have been found wanting. You'd find out how desperately I fall short. As a father, as a husband, as a man, as a pastor, the reality is that if I stand before God on my own, I am seriously, excuse my French, screwed. And now that you've understood that, I want to tell you Perez. And Perez means your kingdom is divided. You know why he's saying that to Belshazzar? Because Belshazzar thought he was secure in his kingdom. Now for you, you're not finding security in Babylon, but you're finding security in your riches. For you, you're not finding security in your riches. You're finding security in relationships that you never should have found security in. For you, you're finding security in coming to church every single Sunday. Maybe putting a couple bucks in the tithe box, which, by the way, if that's the case and you're just doing it to check off a box, keep your money. We don't need it. But you find your security in going through the routine and the religious activities and the traditions and checking off the boxes. And you find your security in everything this world has to offer you. You find your security in your education, your business, your money, your certificate, your diploma. You find your security in everything that you think you should, and God wants you to know there is no security in any of it. Yes. And when you find yourself on the weights and the balances of life and eternity, none of that stuff will matter. That's the bad news. Here's the good news. You can make a different decision today. Because if you notice, the difference between Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar is that if this was said to Nebuchadnezzar, we see Nebuchadnezzar over and over again ends up turning to God. Belshazzar, rather than seeing the signs, dropping to his knees, repenting to the Lord and calling unto him. He just pays Daniel and goes about his business. You have a choice today. And I don't feel pressure to convince you. I don't. My job as a pastor is to be faithful in telling you what this thing says. And if I have done that faithfully, I could stand before God confidently knowing that I have spoken his word. You have a responsibility to hear mene mene tekel presparis or Paris and say, God, I need you. God, I'm desperate for you. God, I need your mercy and grace. God, I need to repent, because if you don't, when you stand on the weight and the balances of life, you will be found wanting and there is no hope for you. The good news is that the same hand that wrote those words in stone are the same hands that hung on a cross and took nails on them and are scarred for your sake. They are the same hands that left all of his riches in heaven. They are the same hands who left all of his glory, majesty, and power to come down to an earth that didn't deserve him at all. That was full of people who are found wanting, who miss the mark every single day. And with passion and compassion in his heart, decide to take upon himself a death that we all deserve. The judgment that we all deserve. Every last one of us. And he takes it upon himself. And with the same hands that he wrote those words, he hangs on a cross. And now the hands that were a message of judgment become a sermon of grace. That if you just put your faith and trust in him, your outcome doesn't have to be like Belshazzar's. But instead of experiencing judgment and death, you could experience mercy and grace and life. What are you doing with that message? Because here's the reality. Whether you realize it or not, the writing's on the wall. And I'm not trying to, this is not a thing of like trying to scare you into making a decision. It's not about that. But a very real reality is that judgment is scheduled for all of us at different times. My time might be the moment I leave these doors. And I pray to God that when I stand before God, that rather than seeing all of the disgusting filth and mess of Jose, he sees the beauty and purity and mercy and grace of Jesus. And my prayer for you is the same. That rather than seeing the mess of your life, you could stand confidently and boldly before your King and know that when he looks at you, he doesn't see you. He sees the blood which we sang about that washes us clean.